Hello, my Facebook friends. This is Bill Allen coming to you from Tyler, Texas. Glad to have you joining in. It is a hot summer day in Texas, and that's what we expect. I am in my air-conditioned office, and that is a great thing. A shout out to our youth group who today is going to see the Texas Rangers play in Arlington. Good for them, and good for the fact that they're going when there is an air-conditioned covered stadium. Well done, guys. Well done. I'm glad that you're joining me, and I do want to let you know that this Thursday is Independence Day, the 4th of July. And so we will be very thankful and prayerful for our nation, but we will not have a Facebook class on Thursday. So I want you to know that that's going to happen this Thursday on the 4th of July. I hope you enjoy some special time of fun and good times with your family, and especially some time during the day that you will be a little bit prayerful and cognizant of our nation and our world on this very important day that commemorates the beginning of our great nation here in the United States. Nice again to have you joining in, and appreciate that very much. We are in the book of Isaiah, and as you know, we are using this. This is the Daily Bible. If you were to buy it at a store or get it online through Amazon or ChristianBook.com or some other thing, Barnes and Noble or wherever, this is what you would get. And the reason I know this is because I just ordered two of them because I needed one for someone who had asked for one or who I was going to give one to. And why I'm doing this is because I have an extra one. This one is an extra one. And so if you would like this, then let me know. If you are here locally in the Arlington, in the Tyler area, then please let me know through a Facebook message, or if you have my cell number, then you can do it that way. It's going to be first come, first serve. They're $20, and that's what we got it for. And you can buy this for $20, make a check to the church if you like. But that is what I have. If a lot of you have one already, and that's great. That's great. But if you don't, or if you want one to give away to somebody, then just let me know. And like I said, it'll be first come, first serve tomorrow night at our ice cream and homemade ice cream and devotional night on July 3rd in our regular Wednesday night hour at 6:30 in our Family Life Center. I'll let that be known as well, unless it's already called for and gone, of course, of course. So you certainly don't have to get it from me. You can order it online. But it is the very best daily Bible reading tool, as you know that I have said, that I have ever found, and that's what we're using right now. And as we're doing that, we are going through the prophets and the historical time of the prophets. So we've been going through 1st and 2nd Chronicles and 1st and 2nd Kings, especially lately, and also of late, the book of Isaiah. We've seen a lot of these great 8th century prophets, Micah, Amos, Hosea, Jonah, all of these great, incredible writers and preachers and prophets. And pretty much we're basically neck deep in the book of Isaiah. Isaiah preaches for a long time, and he goes through a lot of history with the southern kingdom of Judah, especially in its capital, Jerusalem, and all of its kings, including King Hezekiah. We talked about him before, and that's where we are today. In Isaiah chapters 7, 8, and 9. And the focus really isn't on Hezekiah as much as it's on some of the other history in the nation of Judah, and specifically surrounding their neighborhood threats. The king of Assyria, Assyria is the world power. They will give way to the Babylonians, but not for a while. And right now, they are just going from Assyria to the east, modern-day Iran, Iraq, that area. And they are just coming west and annihilating everyone as they go, including the eastern tribes of the nation of Israel. Remember when Moses led Israel through the 40 years in the wilderness, and they got up close to the Jordan River. There were 2.5 tribes that said, you know, we like it here on the east of the Jordan. And that was the tribes of Reuben and Gad, and half of the tribe of Manasseh. they said, you know, we like it here. We'd like to stay here. We'd like to let our wives and children stay here, but we'll cross with our brothers and make sure that we fight for them to get their land just like they have fought for us and with us to get this. And that's what they did. And then after Joshua led the people through the conquest of the areas west of the Jordan, between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean Sea, all the other 9.5 tribes stayed there. And then the tribes of Reuben, Gad, and Manasseh went back home to their new home across the Jordan River afterwards. Well, as Assyria is coming west, that's who they encounter first of the people of God. And as they're going west, they take over those 2.5 tribes and take them into exile. And so we see that already. And the king of Assyria is a guy by the name of Tiglath-Pileser. And I love Dr. John Willis because of his approach to the Old Testament and the great stories and the great messages from the prophets and the history that's there and the great names that he comes up with, like Melchizedek, he calls Mel. Well, Tiglath-Pileser, the king of Assyria, the world power, he calls Pul, Pul. And Pul is the king of Assyria at this time. At this time, there will be other kings that will come, such as Sennacherib in the time of Hezekiah. But Pul is the king right now. Okay, so a few other kings and kingdoms. There is the king of Syria, not Assyria, which is to the east, but Syria, which is to the north. And that is, its capital city was Damascus. And we're familiar with Damascus and Syria even today. Well, the king of Syria, some versions of the Bible call that Aram, Aram. But it is the kingdom of Aram or Syria, and Rezin, Rezin, was its king. And Pekah was the king in Israel, the northern kingdom of Israel that had rebelled against Rehoboam, the son of Solomon, years before. And they had set up their capital city of Samaria. And these were the northern tribes, the 10 northern tribes that were unfaithful to the line of David. Only Judah and Benjamin in the south, where Jerusalem was, stayed with the line of David as their king. And worshiped there in the temple in Jerusalem. Well, Pekah, who is also known as the son of Remaliah, I guess his father was more famous than he was, I don't know, but he was the king of Israel. So you have Pekah and you have Rezin in Israel and Syria, respectively. You have King Ahaz, who is Hezekiah's father, who was the king in the southern kingdom of Judah. And of course, the prophet is Isaiah. Okay, confused yet? Well, we're going to go on and pretend that you're not. Well, maybe not completely, because we'll talk about these guys as we go, because this is what's going on in Isaiah 7, 8, and 9. It's what is referred to as the Syro-Ephraimitic Wars, because Syria and Israel, which was also known as Ephraim, the northern kingdom, would conspire against the southern kingdom of Judah and its king, King Ahaz. And that's what's really going on. And if you've been keeping up with the reading, then you've begun reading through all of this. And so this is in Isaiah 7, 8, and 9, and also some of the readings that you've done in 2 Chronicles and in 2 Kings. And so you have this threat for the southern kingdom of Judah and its king, Ahaz. Now, the threat is not really coming from Pul in Assyria yet. That threat will come in the days of Hezekiah with a different Assyrian king, King Sennacherib. But right now, they're not quite that far yet. Right now, the king of Assyria is going to be threatening soon, will be threatening Syria and its capital of Damascus. And the northern kingdom of Israel and its capital of Samaria. And so that gets us to Isaiah chapter 7, because King Ahaz in Judah is going to be threatened by this king of Syria, Rezin, and the king of Israel, Pekah. And that's when he's going to start to panic. And that's when Isaiah measures in with a very famous name that applies to Jesus 700 plus years later. But in a weird, different way, it also applies to someone in the days of King Ahaz and Isaiah in the 8th century BC. And the name, of course, is Emmanuel, which means God with us. Well, we understand that that was given to Jesus in the book of Matthew, as Matthew recorded the virgin birth of Christ. And he said this was to fulfill what had been spoken by the prophet Isaiah, that the virgin would be with child and she would bear a son, and they would call him Emmanuel, which means God with us. And that was the significance of the virgin birth in Matthew chapter 1, as Matthew explained all of that. Well, in Isaiah's day is where this term first comes up, and according to Matthew, where this prophecy first comes up. But I'm not sure if anyone really even knew that it was prophetic of a future time because of how things played out in the days of Isaiah in the 700s BC. Okay, let's wade through it, starting in Isaiah chapter 7, verses 1 and 2. When Ahaz, son of Jotham, the son of Uzziah, was king of Judah, and so Ahaz is the king of Judah, King Rezin of Aram or Syria, and Pekah, son of Remaliah, king of Israel, the northern kingdom, marched up to fight against Jerusalem, but they could not overpower it. So those two kings, the king of Syria in Damascus and the king of the northern kingdom of Israel in Samaria, they come up against the southern kingdom of Judah. Well, why would they do that? Well, we're going to find out. Verse 2 of Isaiah 7. Now the house of David, which is basically King Ahaz and the line of King David, his descendants. Ahaz was a descendant of King David and those who were loyal to him, which was the southern kingdom of Judah. Now the house of David was told, Aram or Syria has allied itself with Ephraim, another name for Israel. So the hearts of Ahaz and his people were shaken as the trees of the forest are shaken by the wind. They are scared of this alliance between Syria and Israel to their north. As if it wasn't bad that they're hearing all these reports about the king of Assyria annihilating everyone, including the tribes east of the Jordan River that were Jews. Now they're getting this. And so what will they do? Well, God sends a message to King Ahaz of Judah through the prophet Isaiah. And this starts in Isaiah 7, verse 3. Then the Lord said to Isaiah, go out, you and your son Shear-Jashub. Now that is, Isaiah has some sons that have very symbolic names. And Shear-Jashub is the first one. And his name means a remnant shall return. And God is going to use that boy and his name in his message to King Ahaz. Then the Lord said to Isaiah 7, verse 3, go out, you and your son Shear-Jashub, to meet Ahaz at the end of the aqueduct of the upper pool, this is all in Jerusalem, on the road to the launderer's field. Say to him, be careful, keep calm, and don't be afraid. Do not lose heart because of these two smoldering stubs of firewood, because of the fierce anger of Rezin and Aram, Rezin the king of Aram or Syria, and of the son of Remaliah, Pekah the king of Israel. Aram, Ephraim, and Remaliah's son have plotted your ruin, saying, let us invade Judah. Let us tear it apart and divide it among ourselves and make the son of Tabeel king over it. Okay, so now we get a little bit of what's going on here, right? And you get it. You have the king of Syria in Damascus. You have the king of Israel in Samaria, and they're conspiring against the king of Judah in Jerusalem. And now we know why. They're going to make this guy, the son of Tabeel, king over it. They're going to put a puppet king there, that a guy that's going to be sympathetic to their interests. It's not unlike the power plays that we see in our world today, even to some extent in our country. That's what they were doing. They were challenging the king of Judah in order to defeat him and put someone else on the throne in Jerusalem, someone who was not a descendant of King David. because they didn't care about the word of the Lord. They didn't care about the prophecies regarding David and his descendants. All they cared about was power. And so now they're challenging Ahaz, the king of Judah, who is a legitimate descendant of King David, and is on the throne in Jerusalem. They're challenging him and conspiring against him, and it's two nations against one. Isaiah keeps going. Yet this is what the sovereign Lord says. This is in the first part of Isaiah 7. It will not take place. It will not happen. For the head of Aram is Damascus. That's its capital. And the head of Damascus is only Rezin. That's its king. Within 65 years, Ephraim, that's the northern kingdom of Israel, will be too shattered to be a people. The head of Ephraim is Samaria. That's the capital of Israel. And the head of Samaria is only Remaliah's son. That's Pekah, the king in Samaria of the northern kingdom of Israel. If you do not stand firm in your faith, you will not stand at all. And so Isaiah has already called those two kings to the north, smoldering sticks of firewood. And he's basically saying these guys have been pulled out of the fire and they're going out fast. And now he's even more specific. Within 65 years, that northern kingdom of Israel or Ephraim and Syria and its capital of Damascus will be overtaken. And Isaiah tells King Ahaz, if you do not stand firm in your faith, you will not stand at all. Isn't that a great statement? That's a great statement for us today, too. No matter what you see happening in the world all around you, just like the king of Judah at this time, trust in the Lord. Stand firm in your faith, because if you don't, you won't be able to stand at all. And then verse 10 of Isaiah 7. Again, the Lord spoke to Isaiah, to Ahaz, ask the Lord your God for a sign, whether in the deepest depths or in the highest heights. But Ahaz said, I will not ask. I will not put the Lord to the test. So that was good. That was good. He was being respectful of the Lord. There certainly is scripture about that in Deuteronomy that Jesus will quote when Satan tries to tempt him. But in this case, God was approving of a sign, and he actually gives it to him anyway. And that's where Emmanuel comes in. Isaiah 7, verse 13. Then Isaiah said, hear now, you house of David, is it not enough to try the patience of humans? Will you try the patience of my God also? He had offered himself to let you have a sign. Therefore, the Lord himself will give you a sign. The virgin will conceive and give birth to a son and will call him Emmanuel. He will be eating curds and honey when he knows enough to reject the wrong and choose the right. Okay, well, wait a minute, Bill. There was a virgin back then? Well, in this case, the NIV doesn't give you a good translation of that term. You see, when Matthew writes this verse, Isaiah 7:14, in Matthew's day, in Matthew's gospel, in Matthew chapter 1, he uses a Greek term that is clearly meaning a virgin, a woman who has not had any sexual relations. But when Isaiah uses it, it's the Hebrew term. And in this case, the Hebrew term can mean any young woman. And so a better translation would be, the young woman will conceive and give birth to a son, and will call him Emmanuel. And so in the days of Isaiah and King Ahaz, 700 years before Christ, there was a woman who was going to have a baby, and she was going to name him Emmanuel. And then he goes on to say, he will be eating curds and honey when he knows enough to reject the wrong and choose the right. For before the boy, Isaiah 7:16, for before the boy knows enough to reject the wrong and choose the right, the land of the two kings you dread will be laid waste. The Lord will bring on you and on your people and on the house of your father a time unlike any since Ephraim, the northern kingdom of Israel, broke away from Judah, the southern kingdom. He will bring the king of Assyria. Wow, this is all in Isaiah 7, the first 16 or 17 verses. And what you have is the king of Syria or Aram, uniting and conspiring with the king of the northern kingdom of Israel and its capital of Samaria against the king of Judah in Jerusalem. And they're doing it so that they can take him off the throne, assassinate him, and put on a puppet king instead. And all of the southern kingdom of Judah is afraid. And so Isaiah goes to King Ahaz and says, no, it's not going to happen. God's not going to let it happen. And here's the sign. You're going to see this little boy running around. And before this little boy knows enough to choose right from wrong, God's going to take care of this. And he's going to do it with the king of Assyria. He's going to use Assyria to come and defeat those two northern kings, the king of Syria in Damascus and the king of Israel in Samaria. And Isaiah says it's going to happen. And so this little boy, God with us, Emmanuel, is a sign that God is with the southern kingdom of Judah to protect them. And he will. And that is the name that Isaiah gives to Jesus because of the virgin birth. In Isaiah's day, in Ahaz's day, in the 8th century B.C., it was a young woman who gave birth to a boy in the natural way and named him Emmanuel, God with us. And it was a constant reminder for those years until God acted and the king of Assyria came in and defeated the kingdom of Syria and the northern kingdom of Israel. That was their sign and their assurance that God was going to act and he was going to take care of this. Okay, well, now let's fast forward. Not very many verses we'll skip, but let's skip on to Isaiah chapter 8. Remember that verse, Isaiah 7:14, about Emmanuel, because that is the verse that Matthew will quote about Jesus, but using a different term. Isaiah 8, verse 1, the Lord said to me, Isaiah speaking, take a large scroll and write on it with an ordinary pen, Maher Shalal Hashbaz. If Joyce and I had had a boy, we were going to name him Maher Shalal Hashbaz because, well, that's not exactly true. Basically, what that means is that the plunder and the spoil is coming quickly. So Isaiah says, I called in Uriah the priest and Zechariah son of Jeberechiah as a reliable witnesses for me. Then I made love to the prophetess, his wife, and she conceived and gave birth to a son in the normal way. And the Lord said to me, name him Maher Shalal Hashbaz. For before the boy knows how to say my father or my mother, before the boy can say dada and mama, the wealth of Damascus and the plunder of Samaria will be carried off by the king of Assyria. And so again, there's a prophetic name for Isaiah's son, just like before. Before it was Shir Jashub, a remnant shall return. And then the little boy from the young woman who's named her son Emmanuel, God is with us. He's going to take care of us. He's going to bring judgment on them. Now we're a little further down the road. And so now this son is Maher Shalal Hashbaz, which means it's happening pretty soon. Before he can say dada and mama, it's going to happen. And the wealth of Damascus and the plunder of Samaria, the capitals of Syria or Aram and Israel, the northern kingdom, will be carried off by the king of Assyria. Isaiah 8 continues, the Lord spoke to me again, Isaiah says, because this people has rejected the gently flowing waters of Shiloah and rejoices over Rezin, the king of Syria, and the son of Remaliah, the king of Israel. Therefore, the Lord is about to bring against them the mighty floodwaters of the Euphrates, the king of Assyria, with all his pomp. He comes from the east in that area of the Tigris and Euphrates rivers, and this is what Isaiah is referring to. And he says this king of Assyria is going to be like a flood, like the Euphrates flooding and carrying all the way over to the kingdoms of Syria and Israel. It will overflow all its channels, Isaiah 8 continues, run over all its banks and sweep on into Judah, swirling over it, passing through it and reaching up to the neck, but it doesn't overcome the southern kingdom of Judah. Its outspread wings will cover the breadth of your land, Emmanuel, here in Isaiah 8. Raise the war cry, you nations, and be shattered. Listen, all you distant lands, prepare for battle and be shattered. Prepare for battle and be shattered. Devise your strategy, but it will be thwarted. Propose your plan, but it will not stand, for God is with us. In this case, Emmanuel, God is with us to punish. In Isaiah 7, it was to protect and to guard. But in Isaiah 8, it is to punish those nations to the north, all of those people who had refused to trust in the Lord. And so Isaiah 8, verse 11 says, "This is what the Lord says to me with his strong hand upon me, warning me not to follow the way of this people. Do not call conspiracy everything this people calls a conspiracy. Do not fear what they fear and do not dread it. The Lord Almighty is the one you are to regard as holy. He is the one you are to fear. He is the one you are to dread. Not this conspiracy between Israel and Aram or Syria, but rather the Lord your God is the one. Remember, stand by your faith or else you'll never be able to stand. He is the one you are to fear. He is the one you are to dread. He will be a holy place," Isaiah 8 continues on. "For both Israel and Judah, he will be a stone that causes people to stumble and a rock that makes them fall." All of this is reminiscent of passages in the New Testament that we'll go back to these passages and use them. Peter warns the people of his day in 1 Peter 3, using these very words, to trust God and to fear God. Don't be afraid of those who challenge you and threaten you. And it's the very same message that the Apostle Peter gives to us and the people of his day in the first century as what Isaiah was giving to King Ahaz and the people of Judah in the 8th century B.C. and the 6th. In the 700s BC, it's just so exciting, I get carried away. "He will be a holy place, the Almighty, for both Israel and Judah. He will be a stone that causes people to stumble and a rock that makes them fall." Exactly what they wrote about Jesus, that he would be that stumbling block and not everybody would turn to him. In fact, ultimately, they would crucify him. "And for the people of Jerusalem, he will be a trap and a snare. Many of them will stumble. They will fall and be broken. They will be snared and captured. Bind up this testimony of warning and seal up God's instruction among my disciples. I will wait for the Lord," Isaiah says, "who is hiding his face from the descendants of Jacob. I will put my trust in him. Here am I and the children the Lord has given me. We are signs and symbols in Israel from the Lord Almighty who dwells on Zion." All of the things Isaiah had said, the names of his two sons, the words that he had spoken to King Ahaz and to all in the southern kingdom of Judah and Jerusalem was a warning. Don't give in to the threats of the king of Israel and the king of Syria. Trust in the Lord. And he's going to bring Assyria and its strength and its army, and it'll be like a flood, and it will overtake those who are threatening you. It is that God, the Lord Almighty, that we are to fear. It is that God, the Lord Almighty, that we are to trust in for our deliverance. And sure enough, Isaiah goes on and instructs them in that throughout chapter 8. And then in chapter 9, Isaiah writes this beginning in verse 1. "There will be no more gloom for those who were in distress. In the past, he humbled the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali." Those are two of the tribes in the north that Assyria was going to take. "But in the future, he will honor Galilee of the nations by the way of the sea beyond the Jordan." These are the northern tribes of Israel up there in the area of the Sea of Galilee. And this is what Isaiah writes in Isaiah 9. "The people walking in darkness have seen a great light. On those living in the land of deep darkness, a light has dawned. You have enlarged the nation and increased their joy. They rejoice before you as people rejoice at the harvest." Do you remember those words? Jesus used these words as he was reaching out to the people in the north. You had three provinces in the land of Palestine in the first century. You had Judah to the south, the district or province of Judah, where Jerusalem and Bethlehem were. You had Samaria in the middle, where the city of Samaria was. And you had Galilee to the north, where the Sea of Galilee was, including the city of Capernaum, which became Jesus' headquarters, basically. And Jesus was raised in the city of Nazareth in the north, in the northern part of Galilee. Well, all of this, God says, this is going to happen. And later on in Matthew chapter 4, Matthew would remember these words as Jesus goes to the north, to Capernaum, to the city, to the Sea of Galilee in that area. And he quotes from Isaiah chapter 9 as Jesus goes to share the message of God with these people. Matthew remembers these very words from Isaiah 9. In the future, God will honor Galilee of the nations by the way of the sea beyond the Jordan. The people walking in darkness have seen a great light. On those living in the land of deep darkness, a light has dawned, and that light was Jesus of Nazareth. And he did so much preaching, so many miracles, so much teaching in the northern district of Galilee in the first century. And that's what Matthew says is a fulfillment of these very words. The people walking in darkness have seen a great light. And those living in the land of deep darkness, a light has dawned. What a great, great passage here in Isaiah chapter 7, 8, and 9. And then later on in Isaiah chapter 9, we have these words, "For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the greatness of his government and peace, there will be no end. He will reign on David's throne and over his kingdom, establishing and upholding it with justice and righteousness. From that time on and forever, the zeal of the Lord Almighty will accomplish this." Well, it's a great passage, and we immediately think of Jesus and that King of Kings and Prince of Peace and Lord of Lords. And I think it applies to him, but you know, there's no New Testament passage that looks back to these words and says this was fulfilled in Jesus. Like Matthew does with the passage we just read in the earlier part of chapter 9, and also that word Emmanuel and that name that signifies someone special in the person of Jesus Christ. But these words, I think, can apply to King Hezekiah, who would be born to Ahaz and would subsequently become king after his father Ahaz. And he was a great king, and he brought a lot of peace and a lot of reforms. But ultimately, as we read these words, we know they can only ultimately apply to Jesus Christ. To us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders. He will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the greatness of his government and peace, there will be no end. He will reign on David's throne and over his kingdom, establishing and upholding it with justice and righteousness from that time on and forever. The zeal of the Lord Almighty will accomplish this. And it does. And we're reminded of Jesus' words to Pilate as Pilate was interrogating him before finding him guilty and sentencing him to death. Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this world. My kingdom is one that is far beyond the boundaries of earthly kingdoms, including Rome, including Syria, including Aram, including Assyria, including the northern kingdom of Israel, including the southern kingdom of Judah. My kingdom is not of this world." And as he reigns on David's throne, he reigns in a spiritual way. He reigns over a spiritual kingdom as he fulfills the promises to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, and ultimately the promise to King David himself. Jesus reigns on that spiritual throne over his spiritual kingdom, the church. My friend, I hope you're part of that. We pray for our nation, as I said this week. We won't be meeting in this Facebook study on Thursday, but I will be prayerful for our nation and our world, and I hope that you will be as well. But as we do that, let us remember that this nation is an earthly nation, that this nation, as great as it is and as much as we appreciate it, there is a kingdom that will not be shaken, that can never be destroyed, and will never cease to exist, and that is the kingdom of Christ. And on that throne, in that kingdom, Jesus will reign forever and ever. I pray that you will find the peace that comes from knowing the Prince of Peace, no matter what is happening in the world around us, and there's a lot of chaos, and we don't deny the difficulty and the burden and the threats and the fears and the anxiety that causes. But underneath all of that, We trust in the one who is the ultimate King of Kings, the Prince of Peace, Emmanuel, God with us, Jesus, the name the angel Gabriel gave to him, told Mary to name him Jesus, because he will save his people from their sins. And he has. God bless you all, and I will see you not this Thursday, but on next Tuesday.